Okay, good evening, everybody. Let's start by cultivating our motivation. And really feeling how important or how fortunate it is that we have the opportunity to learn the Dharma that we have. There's so many other situations we could have been born into, so many other people we could have been born as, but instead we have this opportunity. And so even if we face some difficulties, even if we face some hardships, to persevere in our Dharma practice is so worthwhile because this opportunity is so precious and so much can be gained from it. And so let's set our minds on creating the causes for a good rebirth. But not only that, creating the causes to be free from all of cyclic existence. But also, not only that, but really opening our heart with kindness to all other living beings and wanting to benefit them. Let's generate the motivation to attain full enlightenment for their benefit, no matter what we have to go through, because it's so valuable to do that, and we're so fortunate to have this opportunity to do it. So cultivate that motivation. Okay, so we've been talking about our old friend, who we've never been separated from, who we are dearly attached to and take better care of than our entire life, our dear old friend, the self-centered thought. Okay? Have you been kind to your self-centered thought this week? I bet you have been. And has it reciprocated in being kind to you? No. But do you still continue to be kind to it? What a loyal friend you are. If we only were such loyal friends to sentient beings and stuck with them when they caused us misery, just like we stick with our self-centered thought when it betrays our trust and treats us horribly. Well, just imagine. But how come we don't do that?
Recording?
But our self-centered thought will never abandon us. Those of us who have abandonment issues, self-centered thought will never abandon you. Okay? Those of you who have rejection issues, self-centered thought will never reject you. Those of you who have issues that I'm not good enough, self-centered thought doesn't care. It thinks you are wonderful and definitely good enough. Okay, it is self-centered thought is your everlasting friend who will hang around you for eternity. True, isn't it? Yeah, and what do we get out of this friendship with our self-centered thought? Misery! Pain! So we must be pretty stupid. I mean, if you were friends with somebody who just kept on bashing you, somebody would say, this is a really dysfunctional relationship. You should go to, AA or something like that. So now we have to have self-centered thought anonymous because we have a dysfunctional, addictive, junky relationship with our self-centered thought, don't we? We're totally, dysfunctional, junky, Really, you know, self-centered thought treats us meanly, cruelly. We don't divorce it, we hang on. You know, is this stupidity? It looks like it, doesn't it? Yeah? And then we wonder why we're so miserable. But we think we know why we're so miserable. It's sentient beings' fault. You know? They attack us, they mistreat us, they don't appreciate us. You know, self-centered thought hangs us by us loyally forever. But sentient beings? No, they're not kind. So says self-centered thought. Okay, so this line that we've been talking about in our text, Mind Training Like Rays of the Sun, says banish the one to blame for everything. Okay, that's this self-centered thought. Okay, that's it. But we don't banish it, do we? No. You know, how many of us in the morning wake up and really think, today I'm not going to harm anybody, I'm going to benefit, I'm going to aim for enlightenment with everything I do today? How many of you do that every morning? Yeah? How long does that thought last? Before we're out of debt, it's gone, and self-centered thought is back in the driver's seat. Okay? So that's why we have to keep on throughout the day renewing our intention, you know? And it's like, I was thinking, you know, self-centered thought is in the driver's seat and we're trying to get it to, you know, go sit somewhere else. It's, you know, like my dad who's 87 and he doesn't want to give up driving. And I keep on saying, but Dad, you know, you've worked hard enough. Let somebody else drive you. So it's like self-centered thought. You've worked so hard. Let wisdom drive for a while. Let compassion drive for a while. You know, you don't have to stress. Sit in the back seat and go to sleep. You know, so I told my dad, does self-centered thought listen? No. Does my dad listen? No. Are we going to listen? Okay. So let's continue here. Moreover, we can attribute all these harms to our selfish attitude and thinking of how it slams the door on all benefits and accomplishments, we should be aware of it. Definitely slams the door, doesn't it? Yeah, I can't get anywhere in terms of the Dharma because our self-centered thought is always sabotaging us. Always sabotaging us. I'm going to get up early in the morning. That thought lamps. Back to sleep, you know. I'm going to control what I say to people today. Gone with the wind. Yeah, I'm going to find something kind to say, nice to say, some kind words to say to people today. Yeah, I should meet some nice people for once. You know, this is what self-centered thought thinks, isn't it? It's true, isn't it? Yeah, I'll speak some nice words to people if they turn up, some nice people, you know. Okay? So it completely sabotages our our accomplishments. We can't get anywhere. Yeah. And the self-centered thought, it's the whole font of our self-pity. And all of our feeling sorry for ourselves, you know, it's like what's that one old faith that springs up out of the ground? So when our self pity goes, you know, what's the tension underneath the earth, the you know, that's making the geyser knees, you know, what is that? self-centered thought. Oh! Oh! That's the way we are, isn't it? You know? We should have some skits about self-centered thoughts. Because it's really the way it is. Isn't it? Likewise, the self-centered attitude is an expression of stupid ignorance. That is true. Since this lack of consideration for others is like taking hold of the sharp weapon of wrong views and slaughtering any concern for good and bad deeds. Okay, so, yeah, with a self-centered thought, we lack consideration for others. So that's like taking hold of a weapon. What's the weapon? Wrong views. Okay, the wrong views that think negative actions are virtuous and virtuous actions are negative. Yeah, so holding on to those wrong views and then slaughtering any concern for good and bad deeds. Yeah? So, you know, we're sitting here trying to create some good karma, and self-centered thought just adheres to our wrong views. Now you might say, well, how does self-centered thought adhere to wrong views? Because wrong views have to do with ignorance, with self-grasping ignorance, not with self-centered thought. But you know what? A lot of our wrong views are made up, I think, based on our self-centered thought, and we cling to them based on the self-centered thought. Because we like to believe things that make self-centered thought feel comfortable. Okay? Yeah? I mean, when we hear a Dharma teaching about karma and the Buddha saying, you know, abandon this and practice that, if we like what the Buddha says to abandon, we make up some reason why the Buddha didn't really mean that. And if Buddha says practice something that we don't want to practice, we reinterpret it, well, the Buddha actually meant this and such. Don't we? Yeah. So what is the one that reinterprets the Buddha's teachings to please our ego? It's a self-centered thought. Isn't it? Yeah. And when we go and get advice from our teacher on how to practice, do we follow the advice? Yeah? Do we follow it? Or, you know, we go and ask for advice, our teacher says something, we nod our head, oh, that sounds very good, I'll do that, and then it's gone. How many of us ever really put attention to practicing what our teacher tells us to do? And, you know, we have a problem with something, teacher says, meditate on this. Do we really meditate on that? You know, for about 3 seconds. Or maybe we do it for one day and then the problem's still there, our mind hasn't transformed. And so we say, well, I'm not going to do it again, that's wasting my time. You know, and we go right back into our old way of thinking. And then, of course, go to our teacher the next day and say, oh, please help me. You know, how do I meditate? And the teacher gives us some advice. And then, you know, we practice it for about a second and a half. And then, you know, indulge in our self-centered ways of thinking again. Don't we? And say, oh, well, my teacher told me to do it. It doesn't work. You know, as if everything's supposed to work instantaneously, without any effort on our part to retrain our mind and reformat this hard disk. You know? We think we should be able to meditate on something one time and boy, the problems are gone. Yeah? We have no kind of patience or fortitude. Yeah? Why not? We're really pretty wimpy. We're really pretty wimpy. You know, I was reading Tenzin, Venerable Tenzin Kacha. She wrote a book with her brother. Yeah? Her brother's some famous somebody. And it's called Rich Brother, Rich Sister. And her brother was in the Marines. during Vietnam. And he does all this, personal... He helps people, you know, kind of make their life better. No, he's not a coach. He does seminars to do, you know, to kind of get people going, you know, in their lives instead of just kind of sitting there waiting for money to come to them, you know, helping them think creatively and get the money they need to do what they want to do. And he was saying what he finds to be a big problem with people is that people just keep on kind of making excuses and saying, oh, I can't do that, this is too hard, I don't have enough time, I don't have enough money. And so he was saying when he was a Marine in the Vietnam War, when he got an order, you know, from his commander, he couldn't say, you know, I haven't had a day off for a week already, you know. And he couldn't say, you know, I did this mission last time, have somebody else do it this time. And he couldn't say, my little toe hurts, get somebody else to fill in for me. He said the only response he could give was, yes, sir. And he said that really helped him in his life, you know, to overcome a lot of obstacles, because he had no choice. He could only give one response, which was, yes, sir. Yeah. And so he said, you know, all this kind of equivocating that we do in our life, this making excuses, you know, which we believe wholeheartedly, he says this is the reason why we don't get ahead. And he's just even talking in a worldly way, you know, why people don't get ahead worldly in this life. Yeah, so let alone Dharma, you know. Because we're always, no, it's too hard. No. Okay, so right here within us is an evil butcher who cuts off the source of a life of high status and definite goodness. So high status means? A good rebirth, okay, which means? Only precious human life? What does good status mean? Upper rebirth, which means, what's an upper rebirth? Humans and demigods in the god realm. Okay, that's higher status. And definite goodness means?
Liberation.
Only liberation? And enlightenment. Okay. So self-centered thought is the butcher that slaughters our opportunity to gain these. The selfish thought holding up the bag of the three poisons is the thief within us who destroys our harvest of virtue. Okay, so we're trying to create a harvest of virtue before, you know, when we need to store our harvest of virtue. But this thief with the sack of the three poisons, which are ignorance, anger, and attachment, comes and steals our harvest of virtue. Yeah, so we work very hard to create good karma, and self-centered thought just takes it away by making us angry, by generating wrong views, by all sorts of things like this. Okay? By collecting rotten, worthless things in the cave of our heart, we have here within us an owl-headed deceiver who attracts all human and inhuman interferences. By collecting rotten, worthless things in the cave of our heart. Is that true or not? Is that what self-centered thought does? What kind of rotten, useless things does it create in your heart? Craving, what else? Grudges,
jealousy,
resentment, hostility, rage, revenge, malice, confusion, greed, doubt, miserliness. Lots of wrong views. Okay? So it creates those rotless, useless things in the cave of our heart that we take care of very carefully. Yeah? We cuddle our wrong views, you know? We protect them from any harm, don't we? You know, somebody tries to teach us correct views. Oh, no, no, no. I love my views. You know? Kind of like a kid with a teddy bear. We just cuddle up to our wrong views and hold on and feel so secure. Okay? So it's an owl-headed deceiver. In Asian culture, an owl is inauspicious, you know? Yeah, not like we consider it something wisdom, you know. They don't. Owl-headed deceiver who attracts all human and inhuman interferences. How does it attract interferences? Because through the self-centered thought, we create negative karma. When negative karma ripens, those are the interferences, aren't they? You know, sickness. Yeah, bad moods, external problems, you know, not having enough money or getting hit or something like that. Whatever interferences we have, they come because of our negative karma, which was all created, you know, with the support of the self-centered thought. Okay? So self-centered thought is like Iran, and ignorance, anger, and attachment are Hamas and Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda. Something like that, you know. At least that's in the view of the Americans, of course, in the view of those people, then, you know, there's a whole other thing. But what I'm getting at is, you know, you have something that underlies it, that feeds all the rest of it, yeah. So our afflictions are basically, I mean, they're much worse than any terrorist organization. All a terrorist organization can do is cause you misery in this life. But the afflictions fostered by the self-centered thought cause us problems in so many future lives and prevent all of our spiritual attainments. Much worse than a terrorist organization. Do you believe that?
I do.
Yeah. What are you more afraid of on a day-to-day basis? Are we afraid of our afflictions? No. Are we afraid of terrorist organizations? A little bit. After 9/11, were we afraid of terrorist organizations? Yes. Are we afraid of our anger? No. Are we afraid of our wrong views? No. Are we afraid of our greed? No. Are we afraid of our selfishness? No, it's our best friend. Okay? So you can see we have it really upside down. In the fields of action, well, this sentence, I think, it needs to be in the field of consciousness are planted the seeds of actions. This says in the field of action are planted the seeds of consciousness, but that doesn't sound right. I think it's in the fields of consciousness are planted the seeds of action, irrigating them over and over again, so watering the karma over and over again with the waters of desire and craving. Is the farmer here within us who cultivates the numerous shoots of the five or six kinds of suffering beings. Okay? So, we have the consciousness, the seeds of our negative actions, the fertilizer, the waters of desire and craving, which makes the seeds sprout. The farmer is the self-centered thought. And what are the results? What's the crop that we get? Rebirth in the six realms. which sometimes can be spoken of as the five realms, because you combine God and demigod into one. Okay? Even though the previous Buddhas, the transcendent subduers, have spent as long as us in this beginningless world, we have been unable to adhere to any of the excellent qualities of this or the world beyond. Yeah, so the Buddhas were hanging out in samsara with us for a while. They practiced and attained enlightenment. We've been unable to adhere to any of the excellent qualities of this world. You know, benevolence, love, compassion, just in a worldly way, you know, or the excellent qualities of the world beyond, in other words, of nirvana. Yeah, we've been unable to cultivate these qualities. So yesterday when Kenzo Rinpoche went through the, you know, the eight qualities of the Buddha jewel, the eight qualities of the Dharma jewel, the eight qualities of the Sangha jewel, do we have any of those eight? Any of those 24? No. No. We've been unable to adhere to them. Why? Because our self-centered thought. Okay? Storing the rotten, useless things in the cave of our heart. So here within us is a naked, empty-handed slob behaving overindulgently. I'm reading out of the book. Otherwise, you're going to think that I'm criticizing you personally. Oh, she called me a naked, empty-handed slob who behaves himself indulgently. Oh, poor boy. It's right here in the book. Okay, so think of it. Are you a naked, empty-handed slob? We're empty-handed, aren't we? Where's our virtue? Where's our virtue? You know? It got stolen by the self-centered thought. You know, we're naked. We don't have any great clothing. Yeah. No ornaments like you know, Tara and Manjushri. No celestial silks, you know, that symbolize great realizations. Okay. And so not only are we a naked, empty-handed slob, but we behave over-indulgently. Not just indulgently, but over-indulgently. How do you behave over-indulgently? What do you do?
Whine.
Okay, you whine. He covers his head, so he pretends he doesn't hear the question. What do you do? You take great comfort in food. And what do you do?
I blame.
You blame. What do you do?
Settle into my comfort zone. Just kind of space out.
Space out your comfort zone. What do you do?
I hide.
You hide. Where? In what?
In the forest.
In the forest? What do you do?
I hide.
You hide? Where do you hide?
In my bed.
In your bed. But we always find you there. Where do you... What about you?
Food.
Food? You want to try again?
Pretty much anything my self-centered thought tells me.
Pretty much anything your self-centered thought tells you. Fred?
All of the above.
All of the above, and especially...
Depends on the day.
How about today?
Blame.
Okay, what do you hide in?
I have more. I just try to not think about it, except that my mind's telling me that I'm really crass and being horrible.
So you try not to think about it and block it out.
Ignore that other part of the stuff.
Yeah. What do you do?
Criticize. Self or others.
Anybody, anything. Okay, what do you do?
Hide in food and in work.
Hide in food and in work. What do I do? Well, let's see. I blame. I keep myself too busy. That's a good start. You probably know what I do better than I do. Huh? Is that a good start? Thank you. So tell me more. What do I do? Intervenes to pacify military conflicts, much confusion arises from a fundamental uncertainty over whether benefit will or will not be forthcoming. Okay, so when there's a mediator who's trying to negotiate, you know, between two parties in a military conflict, yeah, you're doing your best, but you don't really know whether what you're doing is going to be beneficial or not. Because one party may take advantage of the other party, one party may abrogate the agreement, you know, both parties could hate you because you're trying to be the mediator. That happens sometimes too. Okay, so you have this uncertainty about the results of what you're doing. So it is with us. Because of a fundamental uncertainty about whether our fears will lead us to trouble or not, we have within us a coward who can only guess whether the barriers he constructs will suffice to allay his fears that one major hurt will ruin him again. Okay, let's look at that. Yeah, that's one sentence here. Okay. So you have this fundamental uncertainty. So it is with us, because of a fundamental uncertainty, okay, about whether our fears will lead us to trouble or not. Okay, when we are afraid of something, do we think that our fears are going to lead us to trouble, or do we think our fears are going to lead us to safety? We think our fears are going to lead us to safety. Yeah? Do our fears lead us to safety?
No.
No, very seldom, you know, because most of our fears are irrational. If we have a wisdom fear, you know, like when, you know, if we have a wisdom fear, that wisdom fear will lead us to safety. You know, if we have a wisdom fear that's concerned about being born in an unfortunate rebirth, that will help us be more attentive in our karma and will lead us to a good rebirth instead. That's a wisdom fear. If you're merging on the highway and you have a sense of caution because there's traffic going by, that's a wisdom fear. That kind of fear is fine. But here we have a fundamental uncertainty about whether our fears will lead us to trouble or not. Yeah? So many of our fears, what we're afraid of, doesn't exist. You know, we're afraid of things that don't exist. And yet we get all wrapped up in those fears. Because we go into the future about what could happen in the future. We make up all sorts of stories about all the awful things that could happen in the future. And then we store that, you know, that's one of the rotten things we store in the cave of our heart that make us pretty unmiserable. Pretty miserable. Just seeing if you're awake. Joking. Okay. We have within us a coward who can only guess. Okay? Coward of self-centeredness. The coward who can only guess whether the barrier he constructs will suffice to allay his fears. That one major hurt will ruin him again. So we have a fear that one major hurt is going to destroy our life. Okay? So it might be a fear of losing your job. It might be a fear of your family dissolving. It might be a fear of somebody rejecting you or somebody abandoning you. It might be a fear of not being able to tap dance well at the tap dance contest. It might be a fear of for your health. It might be fear for any number of things, okay? So we get some kind of fear, and we think it's going to ruin us again, okay? Because every time we have a fear, we think it's the end of the world, don't we? We cannot see beyond our fear, and we think this fear is just going to destroy me. Okay, so we have this fear that one major hurt is going to ruin us again. Okay? So we construct barriers to protect us against this one major hurt that we're convinced is going to destroy our life. Okay? And that's the coward within us who can only guess whether that barrier we construct is going to protect us. Okay? Kind of a pretty convoluted sentence, isn't it? Yeah? Uh-huh.
It just seems like the first part is saying that there are fears, but we can't discern which is a wisdom fear and which isn't.
That's very true. Yeah.
And we're like stuck, uncertain, because we can't figure it out.
Yeah, we can't.
We build these walls and we don't know if they're going to work.
Yeah. So we can't discern between a wisdom fear and a stupid fear. Yeah. So we build lots of walls around us to protect us because we're afraid everything's going to destroy us. Yeah. And in the meantime, we're imprisoned within our own walls. Yeah. Remember once before we did this thing when I was saying we each dig our own hole and then we decorate it and go live in it? This is the same idea. You know, we have fears, so we build walls around ourselves. You know, we decorate them, we reinforce them with rebar. Okay, we insulate them, we waterproof them, we put razor wire on the top. Any leakage, we plug with this special concrete stuff we just learned about. You know, nothing gets through our barriers, and we live imprisoned by the barriers created by the self-centered mind. Yeah, with this uncertainty that can't discriminate a wisdom fear from a stupid fear.
So then we're always anxious.
So then we're always anxious. Yep. Yep. So why are we anxious? We create stories, you know? Like I keep on saying, you know, we all thought in English class that we couldn't do creative writing. We do creative writing all the time. You know, we create so many stories. Yeah? All the stories about me. You know? That make us so anxious and fearful or so conceited and cocky, you know? Won't listen to anybody. I know it's good for me, you go to hell, you know? That kind of attitude. We fight with swords, arrows, and spears in hope of gaining victory and profit. And when we lose, we console ourselves by accusing somebody else. Okay? So, on a literal way, this is what happens in war, isn't it? If you fight, yeah, I mean, now we don't bother with swords, arrows, and spears, you know, we go right to
bombs and chemicals and, you know, other things. And then when we lose, we blame somebody else. Yeah? Okay. I mean, if you're a politician, you have to practice the perfection of blaming somebody else for when your own things don't go right. And, you know, we have plenty, you know, forget politicians. We're all politicians. We have our inner politician together with our inner child. Okay? You know, our inner politician who always has a reason to explain away everything so that we don't have to accept any responsibility. It's always somebody else's fault. Yeah? It's always some situation beyond my control. Okay? So we console ourselves by accusing somebody else. We find it so consoling to accuse somebody else, don't we? It's so interesting. That's a very good thing. Look in your own mind. The next time you find your mind blaming something, ask yourself, why do I find it so consoling to blame somebody else or blame the condition or blame the table or blame the tape or blame something, you know? Why do I find it so consoling? Yeah. We blame everything but our negative karma. We blame everything but our own self-centered mind. Yeah? The airlines changed my reservation without giving me any choice, as if they, you know, want me to not like them, so I blame them. You know? It has nothing to do with my karma. Oh, yes, it does. Okay. But, you know, just why do I find it consoling? We have within us an evil being who shamelessly blames all problems on our learned teachers and abbots, our friends, and those dear to us, our parents and relatives. I'm reading just okay. We have within us an evil being who shamelessly, totally without any shame, without any thought that we might be wrong, okay, blames all problems on our learned teachers and abbots, you know, because they did this and they did that and they're making me do this and they're making me do that and what do they expect of me, and, you know, they told me to do 5 million prostrations and I calculated it out and I can't even finish it in this life, so if I'm discouraged it's their fault. And yeah, you know, blame everything on unlearned teachers and abbots, you know. You know I requested precepts, but why did they give me this precept? I don't want to keep this one. Yeah? I want all the others because I want to sit in the front row, but I don't want this precept. Okay? So, we're unhappy. We blame our learned teachers and abbots. We blame our friends, don't we? Yeah? Oh, my friend betrayed my trust. My friend, you know, I called them to complain and they, you know, had to go do something else. They didn't stop their world to listen to me complain. Okay, we blame our friends. We blame those dear to us. So sometimes the people that we treat the worst are the people we care the most about. You know, we blame the people who are close to us, our parents and our relatives included. You know, and we're really good at that. Why do I have so many hang-ups? My mother did this. My father did this. My teachers in school did this. You know, my brother did this. My sister did this. My pet gopher did this. You know. There's always somebody to blame. That's so consoling, isn't it? Yeah. And we shamelessly blame, you know, not even with any sense that we look like an idiot when we're blaming others, you know. We completely believe in what we're saying when we blame, you know. It never dawns on our mind that anybody in their right mind would look at us and say, what are you talking about, you know. I mean, we just thoroughly believe what we're blaming, and we try and convince the other people to blame the party that we're blaming, you know, because we want to get everybody on our side, because the more people we have on our side saying that person's wrong, then the more we don't have to take responsibility for our lives. And that's our problem, isn't it? We don't want to take responsibility for our lives. We don't want to take responsibility for what we think. We don't want to take responsibility for what we say. We don't want to take responsibility for what we do. We just want to wiggle our way out of everything. And yet, you know, if we make a mistake, what an incredible opportunity to learn. You know? It's another thing Tenzin's brother was saying in this book, you know. He made a million. There were a few times he opened businesses and they collapsed. Yeah, he had $1 million and he lost it in a year. And he said it was actually quite a good experience and it taught him a lot. Now, somebody who thinks like that is going to learn, yeah, and take responsibility for what they do. But we make mistakes and things don't go well in our lives and we blame others and so we never learn, you know. We just stay within our fountain of self-pity. Okay, not taking responsibility for ourselves or for our lives. And expecting, you know, somebody else to fix everything for us. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's why it's so comforting. Some people find very comfort in some religions with a savior. Yeah. Or even, you know, we Buddhists can look at, you know, Tara. You know, Tara saved me. Yeah. I'm not going to take responsibility for what I do. Medicine Buddha saved me. Yeah. We have to do something ourselves. We are jealous of everyone, from the highest spiritual friend to the lowliest louse. Anybody here have a problem with jealousy? Yeah? Jealousy comes from self-centered thought, doesn't it? Yeah? We compare ourselves with others. They're better than us. Pride comes from comparing ourselves to others. They're worse than us. Competition comes from comparing ourselves to others. They're equal to us. Okay? So we're jealous of everyone, from the highest spiritual friend to the lowliest louse. That's pretty dismal, isn't it? Yeah, but it's the way our self-centered mind works. You know, we'll get jealous of anyone over anything. We are competitive with equals, arrogant towards inferiors, and become conceited when praised and angry when criticized or abused. True or not true? Competitive with equals, arrogant towards inferiors. Yeah. Conceited when we're praised and angry when we're criticized or abused. Somebody's going to say, but my therapist tells me I was abused and I should be angry. Why is this book telling me not to be angry?
Is there a lot of stuff in my heart somewhere?
Yeah. You know, people could get very confused. Yeah. My therapist says I was abused and I need to be angry at the person who has abused me. Why is this book saying that I, you know,
talking about it as if it's something wrong to get angry when we're criticized and abused. Shouldn't I get angry when I'm criticized and defend myself? Shouldn't I be angry when somebody abuses me? Don't I have to defend myself? Isn't anger the only thing that can motivate me to defend myself and prevent further abuse? Is there anything else besides anger that we can use to prevent abuse? Compassion? How's compassion going to prevent abuse? We're just going to sit there and go, oh, it's okay what you did. I have compassion for you. That's not going to prevent my abuse. You know? Huh? What's wrong? That's compassion. Oh, well, I feel sorry for myself enough. That's compassion for myself, isn't it? Poor me. I have so much compassion for myself.
Which thing will lead to more suffering? If you're angry. Where does that go to?
Yeah. How's anger going to lead me to more suffering? My therapist told me I should get angry. I feel like I have some power against that person who abused me. That's how I feel.
It burns down forests of merit.
It burns down forests of merit, but my anger is good. How can it burn down merit? I need to get angry. My whole problem was that I let this, you know, I was a kid and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to defend myself. If I were angry, I would have defended myself. Now I'm an adult. I'm angry. I'll defend myself. What's wrong?
Most of the anger is just a way to, continue the misery.
Most of the anger is the way to continue the misery. But how am I going to stop the misery? What else am I going to feel? If somebody abused me?
But it's not happening now.
That doesn't matter. I can still be angry about it in the past. It hurt me. It damaged me. You know, it harmed me when I was little. It established rotten patterns in my mind, and I suffer because of those rotten patterns, because of what that person did to me. I have a right to be angry at
them. As long as you think that way, you'll never feel better.
You give away any possible power to make different decisions. I'm speaking from personal experience. You have to, see that you can make a different choice in your own behavior going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, it's like, okay, so, you know, they did wrong and I was hard done by, and now I can wallow forever and that will get me
money. Okay, so you're saying as long as I'm angry, I'm not going to feel better.
Mm-hmm. I think the best thing to do when you get to a certain place is to recommend that you created the whole thing.
Okay, so if I... But how can I say I created the whole thing? If this person abused me, how did I create the whole thing?
Depends on if you're only looking at one lifetime.
Okay, but I don't believe in karma.
You don't believe in action?
You know? Why should I believe in karma? Are you telling me that I was a little kid and I was harmed and I deserved to be harmed? I was an innocent little kid.
Sure.
Was I deserving suffering?
No. But if you deserve happiness now, then you need to make different choices to get happiness now. Because staying stuck over there is never going to bring happiness.
Okay, come here. You're going to say this for these people. Come up front.
Okay. I have to remember what I said. So we need to just take the power to make different choices now, because if it was an unhappy situation then, and we stay stuck in that was then we're never going to get to happiness in the now. We need to just look at, you know, if I want to be happy, then what's going to lead me to happiness now?
And why doesn't anger lead you to happiness now?
Oh. Anger doesn't lead me to happiness now because it continues. It's like maybe anger has power, but it has the power to hold me in a stuck place that doesn't feel very good.
You want to come and add something?
My two cents.
I think that anger always causes harm, and that you can have power, you could have more power really through compassion if you could figure out what that was. And usually what you're doing is just getting yourself stuck. And I actually think in the long run, if you can see that you created the causes, then actually in the moment that you realize that, your mind turns to a much more peaceful and happy place, and you can, for me personally, it's easier to have compassion for myself than others when I come to that actual thought, because then there's no victim. All there are people with problems causing harm who don't want to cause harm. They have love for each other and they just screw up left and right. That's what's happening. Everyone in the situation is suffering. So where's the anger?
Diane, do you want to add something?
I always think with an angry mind, if I've been harmed, it keeps me very stuck into that angry place. It keeps me without options. It keeps reinforcing that I deserved what I got, and it gets very confusing. But like Venerable Tarpa said, if you start turning your mind to we all want happiness, none of us want suffering, then that's the doorway to start really pulling yourself out of the hole and finding a way to work with your mind to get out of the experience that you had.
Okay. Babe, you want to add something? Gotta have one of the guys speak.
I'm the one running it. I'm just thinking that I have never once been peaceful or had a calm state of mind when I was angry. And so that right there tells me that anger can't be that good. And that when I have a strong sense of compassion, with it comes a feeling of having some insight or wisdom, and with that comes a feeling of self-confidence and the ability to act in ways that I feel will actually change my situation for the better, rather than just reacting to some external stimulus.
Okay, so there's just one more sentence in this paragraph, so I want to finish it and then we'll pause. Okay, it says, like the roaming of an unbridled horse, of all the disturbing emotions within us, this is the most restless. Okay? So even though the self-centered thought isn't a disturbing emotion, it's worse, actually, than any of the disturbing emotions. And like an unbridled horse is the most restless. Because we'll see, you know, when the self-centered thought runs the show, we're just going from one afflicted mental state to another afflicted mental state, very restless, going here, going there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's actually. Oh, that. Okay. Well, I'll read two paragraphs then. We fight with swords, arrows, and spears in hope of gaining victory and profit.
And when we lose, we console ourselves by accusing somebody else. We have within us an evil being who shamelessly blames all problems on our learned teachers and abbots, our friends, and those dear to us, our parents and relatives. We are jealous of everyone, from the highest spiritual friend to the lowliest louse. We are competitive with equals, arrogant towards inferiors, become conceited when praised, and angry when criticized or abused. Like the roaming of an unbridled horse of all the disturbing emotions within us, this is the most restless. Okay? So when we see this, we should gain some inner courage to not give in to the self-centered thought. You know, to first be able to identify it. Yeah, that's the key trick, to be able to identify it at the beginning. Because some of the time we don't even identify the self-centered thought. We think it's our best friend. Okay, but we need to identify it when it's in our mind. Identify it as the enemy who's stealing our wealth of virtue. And then kick it out of the house and lock the door. Okay? So we can't just sit here and say, oh, self-centered thought is so bad, but then kind of forget about it in our life. We have to be able to recognize it, you know? And sometimes recognizing it is very uncomfortable because it's like recognizing a friend that has been cheating on us. Yeah? Because until now, we have all these behavior patterns that we've taken refuge in, all these emotional patterns that we've taken refuge in, that we think are good and are going to protect us. And now we're beginning to see that they are deceiving us and stopping our happiness and stopping us from being a benefit to others as well. So it's sometimes hard to actually do that. Yeah? Because it really is. It's like if somebody came and told you your best friend was, you know, criticizing you behind your back. You wouldn't believe it. You know? You would just say, no, that's not true. And even if you heard your friend criticizing you behind your back, you would think, oh, they're just playing, or they're joking, or it's not really their voice, it's somebody mimicking them. We would, you know, do something like that. So it actually takes some courage to see that, well, wait a minute, that is my self-centered thought. And then to try and counteract it after that. Okay. So one way to counteract it is simply by seeing its faults. Because anything that we see the faults of, we drop like a hot potato. Okay? So seeing the disadvantages of the self-centeredness acts as an antidote to following it, as does cherishing others. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their divine actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lhotse's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Idam Gurana Mandava Kamiryatayami
Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Emi in the rest glorious.